Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Okay, I think you're going to enjoy this. Madness are one of the most beloved British bands of all time, and I'm delighted now to welcome to the show, from Madness, the legend, the one and only Suggs. How are you, Suggs?
Oh, man, I'm shriveling with embarrassment, you know. I'm good, man. I'm good. Yeah, you're all right.
Yeah, great. So listen, Madness are having yet another revival now. Your latest album went to number one in the UK charts. Back on the road, coming to Galway next month. Do you still love it? Do you still love the gigs? Are Madness shows still those occasions of great joy and life and everything?
Totally, yeah. I think I'd probably enjoy more. You know, it's funny. You wouldn't think it, but... You know, when you're young, everything's just a rush of adrenaline and, you know, and hats and arms and legs and pints of beer flying in the air. And now I can sort of appreciate. My mate said he came to see us in Newcastle, you know, in the north of England the other day. And he said, it is, it's unbridled joy. And you can't, you know, you can't knock that. Do you know what I mean? There's not many jobs where you can say that's what you've done for a living.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You make a lot of people very happy. So listen, Suggs, you pick five songs for us that have meant something to you throughout your life. And we usually start by asking people about the music at home when they were a kid. So your mother was a jazz singer. So did you grow up surrounded by music and musicians?
Yeah, I did. Primarily jazz. But like a lot of my friends who had parents who were musicians, you were kind of embarrassed, you know, that's like old people's music. You know, later in life, I appreciated, you know, Miles Davis and people like that. But when I was a kid, it just sounded sort of dreary and sad, and it wasn't really my thing. Yeah, my mum was a great singer, but again, you know, I think you have more of that in Ireland as well, you know, when you have the crack in a boozer. You know, when I was young, if there was a piano, I'd go, oh, no, my mum's going to start and we're never going to get out of here now. So that's the end of that. But she was certainly an influence on my character for sure, yeah.
And listen, she raised you on her own and I gather you hadn't a lot. Was it a tough enough childhood?
It certainly was, my friend, yeah. And you don't want to go on, you know. But funny enough, I drove past the flats where I used to live in London and we didn't have a bathroom, you know, we didn't have a fridge. We had a sink and a toilet. And you used to go up the road to the public baths. You spend 20 pence. And the geezer used to come in the booth with a spanner and turn the tap on for like 10 seconds. You get like an inch of hot water. but we were all right, you know. You know, my mum loved me. Do you know what I mean? It was just we were skint. But everyone I knew was skint. So we were all in the same boat. I never remember thinking about money. That's what I think now. It's just so much concern about money. You know, if you couldn't, you'd walk. You know, you go to the pub. If one person could afford a round, make it last all night. And it was not to say, you know, romanticise being skint, because it ain't a lot of fun. But I don't remember it being sad in any way. You know, just it was hard. Yeah, hard is the word, yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose you romanticise your kind of childhood and your younger years in a lot of Madness songs. And it does sound like, you know, we were poor, but we were happy and everybody was in and out of each other's houses and we were all in it together and had a great time.
Yeah, as you say, you know, I don't know why, you know, we the songs that we wrote had some kind of moral compass and had some sort of feeling of community. I mean, the band was sort of like some dysfunctional family themselves. But, yeah, we always looked on the positive of life and even if it wasn't always so, but... You know, we wanted to entertain ourselves. We wanted to make a living. And obviously the best way to do that is to entertain the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we always try to liven things up a bit, yeah.
So your first music choice today is London's Burning by The Clash. So did punk change everything for you?
Yeah, very much, yeah. I was like 15 or 16. We just got a flat, in fact, a nicer flat above a carpet shop. And we had a bath now. So everything was looking up. But... it wasn't too far down the road. There was a club called the Roxy, and it was where punk started, really, in London. And so I just thought I'd go and have a look. And it was just a revelation. Suddenly there were all these kids in there, sort of same age as me, you know, making music in bands. You know, and up to that point, you know, bands were on a sort of pedestal. You know, I've been to see The Who, or I Love, and all that. But they were at, like, Wembley Arena or something, you know, and these kids were just rolling about on the floor. And, you know, you didn't have to be particularly good at playing music to start a band. And that really is the catalyst of what got us going.
Okay, let's have a listen to Suggs' first choice today, London's Burning by The Clash.
London's burning! London's burning! All across the town, all across the night, everybody's driving with
The Clash there, London's Burning, and that's Suggs' first music choice today. And Suggs, I'm too young, like, but I think nobody who wasn't there can imagine what it sounded like when you first heard this kind of music. And a lot of people's response, as you say, was to go off and start bands themselves. So how did Madness come together?
You're so right, yeah. The Clash live was really something quite remarkable. So we was a sort of gang round where I lived in North London. There was probably about 30 or more of us. And then a couple of them started to say, why don't we make music? You know, again, another cliche, but it's so, there was very few ways out of the situation that we were in, which was poverty. You know, you had black cab driving, sports, you know, football, boxing, which I never had.
You were a lover, not a fighter, Suggs.
Exactly. Or criminality, you know, again, none of which I had the, you know, the form. So music just became the last resort. And then Mike, our keyboard player, started to take it quite seriously. And we just looked around and thought, yeah, now you can be young. You don't have to be great. And we started rehearsing. And then bit by bit, you know, 30 people dissolved into 10, then 7. And then finally we kind of fixed on the band that we have today.
And tell me about then Al O'Conlon from Mayo and Peggy Conlon from Galway, because Al and Peggy gave Madness the start, didn't she?
He got me right there. And that's funny because I bumped into Henry, Al's son, in Soho. It was his birthday by complete chance.
Yeah.
And he was talking about his dad, Al. Yeah. What a character. In those days, like Camden Town, where we were, it was mostly second-generation Irish, you know, all the pubs. There was about 12 or 13 pubs that had function rooms, you know, and that's where you knocked on the door to see if you could get a gig. And if they didn't have a wake, a hooly or a funeral or whatever, they'd go, all right, well, you know, give it a go, so long as he sells a few pints of beer. But the Dublin Castle was the last resort. It was a bit way out of Camden. And he said, what's your act then, lads? And we said country and western, hoping that it might swing the deal with the Irish regulars. And when seven Spotty Herberts in two-tone suits started leaping about playing Jamaican ska, the Irish regulars were somewhat bemused.
Yes.
But we sold a few pints and we got a residency, and that really was the turning point.
Yeah, and look, anyone who's seen the footage from those gigs, because there is footage there, the place, it was the place to be, and the place was hopping. Did the did the old Irish regulars repair to another room, or?
Well, a few of them hung around, but then, you know, because it was weekly basis, we'd have like 5 of our mates, then 10 of our mates, then 20, and then the place just got packed out, and then there was a queue around the block. But yes, the old chaps could retire to the saloon next door. They didn't have to hang about listening to our racket.
Yeah.
So in Hello was what a character he was. Oh my goodness. Yeah, the old school publicans.
Yeah.
He was always doing the rounds, you know, you'd see him out and about every pub. Jesus, what's this? What's it? A fruit machine? What'd you do with that then? Always looking at the latest technology. Oh my goodness. They got a jukebox. We're gonna have to get one of them. But it was basically an excuse to do, you know, a pub crawl.
Yeah.
But fantastic, bro. Yeah, fantastic. And Peggy's still going. You know, goodness knows.
Is she? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so your next song choice, people will know this song as, I think this was Madness' second single, wasn't it? You've chosen the original version.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you found that. I was worried. I didn't want to play my own tune.
Yeah. So this is Prince Buster, One Step Beyond. Why this?
Well, it's kind of back to what you said, you know, the early days of the band and the energy, like, funny enough, in the Roxy, like, there weren't enough punk records. So between the bands, there was Don Letts, the DJ, used to play ska and reggae because it kind of had a bit of a rebellious kind of feel to it. But the funny thing about this song, yeah, One Step Beyond by Prince Buster, was the A-side was called Gangsters, which people probably know more. Which the Specials then went on to adapt into their first single, Gangsters. And ironically, we did the B-side, which was One Step Beyond. So this one bit of vinyl started two pretty successful bands out of that scene. But yeah, it was on in a... My mate used to hang around in the pool hall, and the record, it had records from like 40 years ago. So you just find odd things like this. And we used to play this over and over. Yeah, and then obviously we made a hit out of it and it changed our lives, really.
Okay, here's Sorg's second choice today. This is Prince Buster, One Step Beyond.
One Step Beyond!
Classic there, Prince Buster and One Step Beyond. That's Suggs' second choice today. So Suggs, you were explaining there about Don Letts used to play a bit of reggae and stuff, and we heard The Clash earlier. They kind of got into reggae later on, Sandinista and that, a lot of reggae vibes. Explain to me that whole melting pot that started happening, that two-tone grew out of around ska, reggae and white kids and black kids and stuff.
Yeah, you know, it was a fusion. Yeah, Don Letts, you know, and you had this kind of rebellious attitude where reggae was concerned in terms of, you know, the authorities and powers that be. It sort of resonated with the punks. And, yeah, The Clash, exactly. They, you know, they did Police and Thieves, Junior Marvin's song, and then they did White Man in Hammersmith Palais. They were doing reggae in amongst the other stuff, which what we really liked. And it was just everyone was sort of going off in a million different directions. And, you know, in our direction was ska and reggae. I had friends who were into rock and roll, you know, went into sort of psychobilly and then bluegrass. Everyone was sort of going back because it made it sort of more exclusive the further back you went, you know, that you knew more about it than other people.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I went from reggae to rocksteady then to ska, you know, and then we were really onto something that no one else was doing except for the Specials, yeah, who then walked into the pub that we were hanging about in at the time, the Hope and Anchor, which was the other pub, apart from the Dublin Castle, that had a little basement with bands on. And these blokes came in and looked a bit like us, and they were playing ska, you know. And it was, I said before, I didn't know whether to feel jealous or vindicated.
And the Specials had come on this and developed themselves completely independently of you, but neither of you knew about the other, no?
Not at all. And it's just funny, that zeitgeist. I mean, I think that happens a lot in culture, doesn't it? You know, there's a time and a place for something. But they were fantastic, yeah. So they played in the basement, Neville jumping up and down, blowing holes in the ceiling with a starting pistol. And I thought, crikey, this is really starting to turn into something, yeah.
Okay, and your next choice is the Specials, and this is Do Nothing. Specials, Do Nothing, and that's Suggs' third choice. I think, Suggs, we could have another ska revival kicking off in Ireland after people listen to this. Come here, will you explain something? Because the Nutty Boy kind of scene was quite big in Ireland, right? So would the Specials, would they have been more the Rude Boy kind of thing, and Nutty Boys was more the Madness thing? That was your version of it, yeah?
I think there might have been some subtle derivation. I mean, it's hard now, basically. We all had trousers that were too short and loafers. And I think it was very, very close, you know, very close, yeah, for sure. And that whole black and white thing was really what was catching on.
Yeah. So was it a surprise then when Madness started having these huge hits and started becoming this beloved pop band?
Yeah, it was, yeah. I mean, you never know what's next, you know. I mean, we got, and you can't, sorry, I'm just doing an interview, sorry. I could do it anywhere, yeah. You just have to have the sound on. Sorry, my wife wants to hear the tennis, do beg your pardon.
Does she want to join us? Does she have anything to add here?
We can do the flipping interview, yeah. What do you think about Madness? She's got no comment.
No comment. Is she not a fan, no?
Don't you start. I'm in enough trouble. Right, come on.
Okay. So he started having a string of it. Like, he were a great singles band. Anyone who was alive through the first half of the 80s, like a Madness single, were always a reliable. Top of the Pops was the big outlet then, wasn't it? Like, and you'd either do a really great live performance or you had brilliant videos as well. You used to get barred from Top of the Pops regularly, didn't you?
We did indeed, yeah. I mean, we was always messing around and getting in trouble. You know, it's the most popular programme on the television when we was going. You know, 15, 20 million people watched that. And if you went on Top of the Pops, your record was bound to go up. But we was always messing around and we got banned off the Top of the Pops, I think, four times at least, for just not taking it seriously. But I remember the girl who worked with us said, you know, most bands give their right arms to be on Top of the Pops. I said, we're just not right arm sort of giving people. Anyway. But we had a lot of fun.
Okay, let's go to your next song choice. And I suppose when you think about this song, him and a lot of artists like him, they contain something of the DNA of what Madness started in British pop. Just Jack and Snowflakes. Why this?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, yeah. Because he was from Camden Town, so I got to know him. But I think of him, I think of the Streets, I think of Jamie T., these kids who come from the same sort of background as us, you know, writing about real life, but with a certain sense of humour, although this isn't very humorous, this song. But, yeah, a certain sort of poetic narrative, yeah, which did relate to what we were trying to write songs.
OK, let's have a listen. And this is the version that is kind of built over The Cure's Lullaby. This is Just Jack and Snowflakes.
I'm moving your mental feet in complex dances and jigs. I loosen up your consciousness like a syrup of figs. It's time to emerge from camouflage leaves and twigs. Time to throw away the fake noses and fright wigs. Time to face the music, no more metaphor. Time to decide your fate. Will you be cooked or go raw? Will you be rare and bloody with your soul exposed or well done? A charcoal surface with your insides froze.
That's Just Jack and Snowflakes, and that is Suggs from Madness's fourth music choice today. Hey, Suggs, speaking of The Cure, how did Madness get on with The Cure? Did the Goths look down on the Nutty Boys, or what was the politics of that?
It was, well, you know, it was so disparate in them days. You know, I think a lot more than now, there were so many different scenes, yeah. You know. So you had the Goths, you had the Pogues down the road with the Irish Rebels, you had the house music, the Soul Boys, the Casuals. But I do remember on that golf sort of thing, we supported Echo and the Bunnymen at the Electric Ballroom in Camden Town. But not that they were goths, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Long raincoats types, yeah.
And, you know, quite a clash of hairdo, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'd say you're telling, smarten yourself up, boys. Get a nice suit.
You know, you look down at the time when you listen back, and it was all just... It was either good music or not, do you know what I mean, really? Yeah. But, you know, in those days, you were judging people's trousers and hairdos, you know, whether you liked them or not, yeah.
You had an amazing run of hit singles and albums then in the first half of the 80s, and, you know, people remember Baggy Trousers, House of Fun, It Must Be Love, Our House. It kept churning them out, all classics. You were probably the biggest pop band in Britain at that stage. And then did it all kind of fall apart in 86? You were a bit burnt out at that point, were you?
Yeah, we'd been like sort of on a treadmill like the 60s, you know, two, three singles, an album, touring. And our keyboard player Mike was really shouldering the responsibility, and he decided when he met a Dutch girl, moved off to Holland. So we should have just taken a break, but we just sort of drifted apart. But it's funny, 1986, we still had more weeks in the charts than any other band in the 80s. And we'd given 4 years to catch us up. But I think it was just good, yeah, that we all needed a break and we'd all had kids. So it was nice to just get some sort of relative normality back in our lives. And then we come back in 1992 and it went off like mad.
And I think as well, when you had kids around that time, I suppose fatherhood can make us reflect a bit as well. You reflected a lot on your lifestyle, your own dad who you never knew, all that kind of stuff, didn't you?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, yeah. I mean, more when my kids grow up, you know, when they're little, you're just concentrating on them and not yourself. I think to recognize what hurts you and makes you angry or sad or whatever is the main thing. You can't actually change it, you know what I mean? But you just recognize it.
Yeah, and then wear your scars when you know what your scars are, yeah?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. exactly.
So look, Madness do keep getting back together as well. Your recent album, Theatre of the Absurd, presents C'est La Vie, which is a great album, has been a hit.
Yeah.
I believe it was a bit harder getting the gang back together this time, was it? Was there a bit of dissent in the ranks about various things?
Yeah, I mean, we all had, you know, just like everyone else, it's completely polarised, like what were the right and wrong things we should have done about lockdown and COVID and all that. And now we had, like, the rest of society completely opposite opinions. When you make music, you know, that it's sometimes quite good to have a bit of friction. And then the music itself is the healing process. And, you know, and you've all got a right to have a different opinion. And that's what happened on that record.
And then what's it like on tour these days? Are you all in separate buses and just meet each other on stage?
No, funny enough, at Christmas, it was getting a bit like that. But we sort of sat down and we said, come on, it can't go on. And the venues aren't big enough to have 17 dressing rooms. Anyway, we're back in the same room together, I'm very pleased to say, at the moment. Anyway, we'll see how it goes.
Excellent. But, and you know, are you like well behaved these days?
Well, you know, relatively, not always, you know, no, sometimes I blow it, you know, but not in the ways that I used to, because I can't bounce back like I used to. So, you know, it's very, very, what's it called? Rationed.
Yeah, yeah. I think there is, it's kind of more the psychological terrorism of a hangover as you get older as well, isn't it?
Joking.
Yeah.
The fear, the horror. Yeah. The heebie-jeebies, and here they come. Oh, no.
Yeah.
And it's that not waking up, is it? It's coming to like that. Ooh, like a flipping zombie sitting up in bed like that. Lightning bolt of fear.
Yeah. So you've actually, Madness, you've played on the roof of Buckingham Palace. You've kind of become part of the establishment, if you will, in Britain. How does it sit with you now being this kind of beloved, cuddly national treasure?
Like a frog in a sandpit. No, it's just totally out of our control and nothing I would ever wish for, don't care for.
Well, look, you know the way to look at it is everyone's just glad you're around, I think, and the world is a better place with you and with Madness in it. I bet you are.
Around the stage, I say, what a miracle. Look, all of these still alive. You must be joking.
Yeah, fantastic. Your final music choice is Dave, How I Met My Ex. We don't have time for the full 7 minutes of it, but just tell me quickly why you chose this.
Well, again, a bit like that Just Jack thing. I like a good narrative story. You know, so many songs are just like, oh, you know, my baby and my helicopter and my car and all that. He just writes, I think, very good stories, and I think he's a good writer. That's why I chose this. Also, to make myself sound vaguely contemporary, because everything else was 100 years old.
Excellent. Right. Still relevant. Okay, you're going to be kicked out of another room.
Yes.
You can catch Madness at Galway Summer Sessions at Galway Airport on August 10th. Suggs, thank you so much. We'll finish on your final musical choice, Dave and How I Met My Ex. Thanks, Suggs.
It's a pleasure, mate. Thank you.
And I don't know if it's the pressure, where paper meets the passion and the pleasure. We all gotta work to survive, so now she's popping up at shows, taking pictures on her own. And at first it wasn't cool, but we'll let it go. Until I saw in some rapper's tracksuit, I felt away. She told me it was work and she was in some studio taking pictures, and I just sighed. Some halfway wannabe rappers had fed her lies, ain't looking for no picture. I know it's your profession, but read their intentions.